Happy to welcome to our program Frederick Clarkson, Senior Fellow with Political Research Associates. And Frederick Clarkson, someone who has long researched and written about and examined the Christian right movement in this country. And Frederick, I appreciate you making time to come on our show tonight. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
I think a lot of people in the country were a bit, maybe not surprised, but unsettled by the victory of Roy Moore in the Republican primary election for an open U.S. Senate seat there in Alabama. That was just last week. I wondered if you would give us a bit of background information on Roy Moore. I think people maybe know he was a judge, Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court twice and twice removed, but they may not know some of the important details about his removal. And that might be a place to start before we talk about the significance of Roy Moore's victory in the Republican primary last week.
Well, sure. Roy Moore got appointed as a local court judge in Alabama, where he became famous for hanging a hand-carved by him wood plaque to the Ten Commandments in his courtroom. And he was also famous for opening court sessions with prayer and leading jurors in prayer. And pretty soon there was an ACL lawsuit, and he rode the wave of publicity from all of that to winning statewide office as the elected Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Then, after being there for a while, in the dead of night, he had installed a 2.5-ton monument to the Ten Commandments, installed in the foyer of the state courthouse. Now, this wasn't just a monument to the Ten Commandments. It sort of became a pilgrimage point and a place where people came to pray. So pretty soon the atmosphere was more like a religious sanctuary than it was a courthouse. And eventually a federal judge ordered him to remove it, and he refused. So a state judicial board removed him from office for defying a federal court order. Later on, he was elected once again to be Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And this time, he defied yet another federal judge by trying to circumvent a federal judge's order to implement marriage equality decision of the Supreme Court so that local probate judges could issue marriage licenses. So once again, he was removed from office. But again, with his particular interpretation of the appropriate role of the federal government as a what should be a vehicle for God's laws, as he understands it, and therefore he sees himself as a man who's standing between God as a civil servant and seeking to demonstrate to the country what a good civil servant should be doing.
And Frederick, could you summarize some of the more outrageous statements we've heard from Roy Moore over the years concerning homosexuality, concerning the U.S. Constitution and abortion?
Well, I'm not sure I can give you the quotes off the top of my head, but he certainly sees the Constitution, the First Amendment, as a vehicle for Christianity. He doesn't view it appropriate for Muslims to hold office. He specifically denounced the seating of Keith Ellison, the first Muslim member of Congress. And most interestingly, he calls Islam a false religion. We should talk a bit about that. But yeah, he believes in that homosexuality and abortion should be criminalized. But and he also doesn't think that the U.S. Supreme Court has the authority to do the things that they've done with regard to abortion rights and marriage equality.
And, Fred, I would ask you what the significance of his victory in the Alabama Republican primary for this open Senate seat means. What is the importance for our listeners to know about this this win that he had the other day?
Well, there are a number of things. I mean, one is that he's demonstrated that the viability and the strength of the Christian right both in terms of their ideological coherence and their organizational strength. And in Roy Moore's case, the peculiar alliance that is clearly forming between what we've always understood to be the Christian right and what we now know as the alt-right. It's a disturbing coalition that clearly was catalyzed by Donald Trump, but it shows that the political strength is there and that it's populist in the sense that Luther Strange, who was the incumbent Republican, was an established conservative, pro-business, supported by the Chamber of Commerce kind of politician. Exactly the kind of politician that Donald Trump had pledged to throw out. The people who elected Donald Trump still want to do that. And even though Roy Moore may seem wacky to some, he's an anti-establishment guy, and that's good enough for them.
And what does it mean to the Republican Party, do you think, Fred, that voters in Alabama would support this guy over a candidate that Donald Trump himself had endorsed and campaigned for?
Well, it shows that the ongoing division in the Republican Party between the establishment and sort of the Tea Party, alt-right, populist, and even a good bit of the Christian right wing of the party. Donald Trump, I guess I take a little different view than a lot of people about Trump's support for Strange. Strange had supported his agenda in the Senate, and Trump is a loyalist. You give loyalty to him, and more often than not, he's going to show loyalty to you. So he campaigned for Strange, who was a temporary appointment until a special election could be held. And Trump campaigned for him. He did what he apparently said he was going to do. But unfortunately for him, his base was behind Moore. But I think that everybody understands all this, and that's politics, and all will be forgiven.
How different do you think the Republican Party is in Alabama compared to other states around the country and their support for this extremist viewpoint that Roy Moore carried into victory there in the primary?
Well, we certainly know that Alabama is a deep red state, and that it's more Baptist and more religious than almost any other place in the country. So there's that base element to it. And so in that sense, we really shouldn't be surprised that Roy Moore would happen. The Alabama is different than most places in the country. It's more like other parts of the South than it is, say, here in Connecticut and Massachusetts where I am. So we are seeing the kind of historic regional geographic divides that have marked the entire history of our country. And I should add that Roy Moore personally believes that Alabama should secede from the Union, and he's closely involved with people who were leaders of the League of the South, a neo-Confederate group that believes that the entire South should secede and wants the South to rise again. Were prominently involved in the march on Charlottesville. There's a really ugly politics that's right next to where Roy Moore is.
We're speaking with Fred Clarkson, senior fellow with Political Research Associates, and Fred, what is the right? What does the Republican establishment, quote unquote, think about Roy Moore? You hear a lot of commentary after this primary victory by Roy Moore that people like Majority Leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, were unhappy because they thought it would make it more difficult for mainstream candidates to win the general election in other states if Roy Moore, like candidates, challenged incumbents in other places around the country.
Well, I think he's absolutely right about that. I think the good news for the Republican Party is that there really aren't any other Roy Moore-like candidates. There may be some Tea Party kinds of figures who are in the House who could make a plausible run at sitting senators like, say, Jeff Flake in Arizona. But, you know, Roy Moore is a one-of-a-kind character, and he's won statewide office twice. And it's very hard to find anybody remotely like Roy Moore who has done that. He's been one of the best-known and controversial politicians in the state for a couple of decades now. And it may be that characters like that arise, but we haven't seen them yet.
And what do you make of Roy Moore and his theocracy and his, I think, very upfront opposition to democracy in the U.S. Constitution? Is that something that appears to trouble his supporters? You know, everybody waves the flag and talks about patriotism and the values of freedom of speech and democracy, but Roy Moore decidedly does not support those things. Is that something that just flies over the head of people who vote for this theocrat, or is there really a kind of bedrock support for overturning our democracy and getting rid of the U.S. Constitution?
Well, I think they would see it as that they'd have a different view about what democracy and the Constitution are supposed to be, and that contemporary America has gone out of sync with what the Founding Fathers intended. And they would argue that America was founded as a Christian nation, and that the Constitution and its laws should reflect a distinctly Christian point of view, meaning their particular kind of Christianity, of course. So if you look at the way society was organized in the 18th century, and particularly the Massachusetts Bay Colony, that's more like the vision for society as they would like to see it. So they think that all the rest of us are betraying the Constitution, and we're the ones who are anti-democratic.
But is there not some kind of disconnect? And maybe a better way to ask this question, Frederick, is if people like Roy Moore were in power in the United States, how would America look different? What institutions would we no longer what kind of institutions would no longer be in place? What kind of protections would be absent from a country that that Roy Moore would form?
Well, in fairness to Roy Moore and his ilk, they would not use the power of the federal government to enforce these things. When they say states' rights and state sovereignty, they mean it. What Roy Moore and his ilk want to do is go to Washington. And Ted Cruz is in this camp, too. They want to remove the power of particularly the courts, but the federal government generally over all of our lives, whether it's taxation or forcing acceptance of groups we don't like, or they don't like, rather. They didn't like the civil rights laws when they were implemented, and they don't like them now. And we're seeing it play out in terms of acceptance of same-sex marriage. Is the latest version of that, and they see it as a form of judicial tyranny, having to accept things of which they religiously don't approve. So we would see a massive reordering of the way that the federal government works and what it has oversight of and what it doesn't.
And where is this wing of the Republican Party headed, do you think? Are they on the ascendancy, or is there some kind of pushback by different, more moderate forces within the GOP?
Well, there's both. I think that the Christian right has been busy organizing itself for a couple of decades now, and we see the results in terms of their electoral successes and their delivery of a presidential victory to Donald Trump, among lots of other evidence. And for the most part, the establishment Republicans have been playing golf.
So you think they may be fiddling while Rome burns, or what?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think they kind of still are. I think that establishment politicians and a good bit of the left, you know, religious and secular, you name the constituency, and the situation is the same, and that is that there's a profound denial of the reality of the strength and the intentions of the Christian right. You know, back in the 90s when you and I were first talking, you know, it was the same thing. Oh, they're a bunch of crazies. They won't last. They won't go away. But they did. they continued on. And they continue to this day to gather in strength and maturity and political effectiveness in ways that most of the rest of us have a very hard time accepting as true. We think that things will go back to the way they used to be or somehow something better. And some of those things happen. In some ways, things are better for a lot of people in a lot of ways. But that doesn't change the political strength and intention of the Christian right to roll that back in whatever ways they possibly can. Donald Trump is going to deliver on a lot of his promises to the Christian right. He's already populated half the cabinet with Christian right leaders. And they've only begun to affect policy. We're already seeing the radical success of the Christian right at the federal level. In the beginning of the reduction of the role of government agencies, we see it dramatically in, with the Environmental Protection Agency and the Interior Department, but it's going to be in lots of other places too.
You know, it seems when Donald Trump was running against, 15 or 16 other candidates during the Republican primary in 2015 and 2016, it seemed like Donald Trump would be the opposite type of candidate that the Christian right would support. But the public opinion polls and the exit polls after the election found that the Christian right overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump, a guy who certainly doesn't appear to lead a life of morality in any sense of the word, given his womanizing and divorces and the way he speaks, his immoral stances on so many things. It just seemed a bad fit. But Fred Clarkson, maybe you could speak to why in the end so many folks around the country who call themselves part of the Christian right supported Donald Trump.
Well, there are a couple of surprisingly good reasons for this, despite the apparent bad fit. It surprised me too, but you know, for a very long time, going back a couple of decades, the Christian right has been very unhappy with Republican politicians who talk a good game and get their support and deliver a little bit, but not nearly as much as they would like. There's still no prayer in the public schools. Abortion is still legal. Gay people can get married. Everything seems to be going in the wrong direction. So they don't feel that the Republican Party, even the conservative part of the Republican Party, delivered for them. And so when you look at the 16 candidates on stage, there were some people who you thought might, Ted Cruz, you know, maybe even Jeb Bush. But in the end, they looked to Donald Trump as somebody who was willing to make a deal, as somebody who would be transactional and say, I'll do this and this and this for you. And deals were made. Elements of the Christian right could point to biblical examples of similar things. Most famously, King Cyrus of Babylon, who had freed the Jews, who had been in slavery in Babylon for a long time, allowed them to come to Jerusalem, and he even helped to build the temple. He was seen by Christian right leaders as a man who was a pagan, was not a man of God, but who nevertheless helped to accomplish God's purposes. And that was the theological justification, the biblical rationale for supporting an ungodly man like Donald Trump, because maybe he could do what even godly men could not. And so far, they've been right.
We're speaking with Fred Clarkson, Senior Fellow with Political Research Associates, and we'll give out the web address for the group and ways you can find Fred Clarkson's recent writings. And I should mention, I actually forgot to mention, an important article that just was published yesterday in Salon.com. It's titled Confusing God and Country Meet Roy Moore, Alabama's Next Senator, where an interview with you, Fred, recently following the election victory of Roy Moore in the Alabama Senate primary is central to this writer's definition of Roy Moore and what he represents. So we'll give out the web address for that as well. But, Fred, I would ask you, as you look at Roy Moore and the extremist wing of Christian political activists that he represents, what kind of threat do you believe it presents to our democratic values here in the United States today in 2017?
Well, you know, if you were going to hold a popular referendum on these things, they would lose. But it's often the case that it's the best organized faction, the best organized minority that prevails in politics. And if you look at Donald Trump and a lot of these characters, like Roy Moore, you know, they came to Washington not to preserve it and to build it, but to destroy it. The way that we think about democracy and public life and the role of government, you know, the broadest swath of us, really. I mean, people like Donald Trump and Roy Moore and Steve Bannon are more like each other than any of them are like mainstream Republicans and anybody to their left. This is a revolutionary faction who is trying to figure out how to destabilize what we think of as democracy, and particularly the role of the federal government in preserving and advancing democratic values. That's their that's pretty much their stated mission. And Roy Moore, if he becomes a U.S. senator, will be in an unusual position to do it. We can remember when Ted Cruz was first elected senator from Texas, and he, you know, single-handedly shut down the federal government, practically, you know, in cooperation with some Tea Party people. But as a freshman senator, he was able to do that and cost the government billions of dollars with filibustering. We haven't heard that much from Ted Cruz lately because he's an ambitious politician. He has to make nice, or nicer than he used to. Roy Moore is 71 years old, and he has no further ambitions. So he can go in and filibuster and put holds on judicial and ambassadorial nominations as much as he wants to, and he can be a real wrecking ball.
And I guess a final question, Frederick, would be this. You've been someone who's researched quite exhaustively the Christian right, its ideology, its theology, its theocratic ambitions. How do you recommend listeners who are quite concerned about the threat that represents to our democratic values? What is some of the more effective ways people can push back against this this move towards a theocratic state?
Well, one is to, of course, participate in democratic institutions and values and support them wherever we can. And to you know, encourage people in other states to do the same. The kind of mass communications that we have now allow people in the Northeast to be effective in the South in ways that were unheard of in the past. We have to arrive at a common framing and sufficient common and terms, you know, so we understand what we're talking about with one another, that really matches the 21st century reality that we're in. A lot of our terms and frame of reference are left over for another time, and to really catch up with understanding how to explain a Donald Trump, a Roy Moore, is, you know, just one of the tasks of our time, and I guess I would begin with that kind of basic education.
Well, Frederick, thank you as always for filling us in on a lot of the ins and outs and complexities of these issues. They're not always black and white, and I appreciate you taking the time to get into some of the details here. And do leave our listeners with the web address where people can find your writings over at Political Research Associates or any other website you want to mention as well.
Well, where I'm a fellow is Political Research Associates. You can always Google that if you don't remember the web address, but it's www.politicalresearch.org. And I do recommend checking out the article in Salon by Paul Rosenberg about Roy Moore. that certainly gets deeper into the kinds of things that we're talking about here tonight than anything else that I've seen.
Yeah, no, quite recommended here. Again, the title of the article is Confusing God and Country. Meet Roy Moore, Alabama's next senator. Alabama's likely senator isn't just a Christian conservative. He wants a theocratic state under biblical law. And it's written by Paul Rosenberg, as you said. And that can be found at the Salon.com website. Fred, as always, thank you for making the time for us. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks so much for giving me the time.
Take care. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott.
Frederick Clarkson, Senior Fellow with Political Research Associate.